Hello and welcome once again
to Crazy Comics and Stories.
It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard.
And he is old.
And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Not unwell, thank you.
Well, that's the most non-committal thing you've ever said.
True. Well, other than, I might be interested in doing a podcast someday.
Well, here I am in my second week off. The TiVo is now at 80% full. The Stack O' Comics has shrunk by at least a foot.
And I even got good news.
My cat has decided that she wants to be on my lap at all times.
Ooh, too many jokes. Keep it PG.
And I have started to cook some things that are almost healthy for me. So time off. It's a weird thing, Joe.
Speaking of which, I got time off to go to the MSP Comic-Con.
Really?
I was able to switch the 2 days for the actual Comic-Con with various coworkers, and then miraculously, the Friday before opened up, so I'll be there to actually help them set up. So I'm looking forward to that, because there will be over 250 creators.
There will!
There will be over 100,000 square feet of extreme comic book action. There'll even be a costume contest. There'll be door prizes, grab bags. And, of course, you and I will be running the infamous charity booth. Which,
infamous?
Well, we've never really named it. White Elephant,
garage sale,
rummagey
type
stuff.
I always call it the
garage sale-y type thingy. And, of course, we are taking donations for it. So if you're interested, give us a email or give us a ring and we'll give you the address to send stuff from. Because we've sold all sorts of stuff over the years.
What was your favorite thing that we ever got, Joe?
Well, I don't know. The ShamWows were pretty amazing. Tube socks were cool.
My favorite was still the candy corn candles.
Yes, for my grandma.
Yes, because for 2 days I was able to say, come on, candy corn candles. They taste better than actual candy corn.
Very true.
And someone actually bought them.
But for other fun, matter of fact, we're getting into that time period where if you have a favorite comic creator you want to get some artwork from, you should go over to their website that the MCBA has, which is mcbacomiccons.com, and just send a quick note to your creator. A few of them, like Mark Stegbauer, he's already said, guys, I've only got 4 slots left for pre-con commissions, because he says he'll take them at the convention, but he says he's also got regular comic books to get out. So it's a good time to drop a note and have your favorite creator just jot something special up for you. And also take a look too to see if there's somebody coming that you'd like to get an autograph from. Same thing with dealers. If you're looking for that certain rare Golden Age, Silver Age, Modern Age comic, send a dealer a note and, they'll probably, if they have it, bring it for you. So we're looking forward to that. I have a feeling we'll probably talk a little bit more about it next month.
I imagine we may do our usual annual convention.
Oh, yeah.
Episode.
And then, of course, the post-con convention story.
Yes.
Because we're not really getting paid for that. We're not like sponsors of the MCBA. We just like the con.
You know who are our sponsors?
Who?
These guys!
You may not be able to join the Mighty Marvel Marching Society anymore, or even the Friends of Old Marvel, but you can visit our sponsors. Our oldest sponsor is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. If you need a website, go to DreamHost.com. They will take care of you as they've been taking care of me for over 15 years. If you use the code CRAYZ, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year of hosting. If you are listening to this podcast, you are very good looking. That's right. As a good-looking person, you can't trust your skin to any old razor. That's why you need to shave with the amazing razors you can get delivered from the Dollar Shave Club. Every month, they send a box with your shaving supplies. At the beginning of the week, or whenever you want, you pop in a fresh blade and get that fresh blade shave. It feels fantastic, and it's just one of the many, many ways that you can maintain the good looks that everyone has come to expect from you. And if you join us at the Dollar Shave Club, their plans start at just $3 a month. They have a money-back guarantee, and there is no excuse for you to ever use any other razor. So just go to dollarshaveclub.com/crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, to get started. One of the things you need to do this year, you need to get healthy. We all need to be healthy so we can all hang out a lot longer. And one of the ways to get healthy is not to go down to the vending machine and buy those chips or those candy bars or any of the other vending machine snacks. You want healthy snacks picked out by actual chefs who know what they're doing, and you can do that at graze.com. And if you use the code CoreyS3R5P, your first and fifth box are free, so you can try it out, see if that's the kind of stuff you like. That's CoreyS3R5P. Our final sponsor is Worldwide News. Worldwide News is the story of the lowest rated cable news network and the people who work there. It is updated twice a week by writer Corey Strode, hey, that's me, and artist Dangerous Dan Moore. Worldwide News at worldwidenews.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites. If you would like to contact us, there are a whole bunch of ways. You can email us at corey.strode@gmail.com. You can give us a call. We have a voice line that is open at all times at 952-856-0519, or you could go to Facebook and join the Crazy Comics and Stuff fan page. If you would like to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories or on Solitaire Rose Radio, you can. Just send me an email at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject: advertising. Thanks.
Neat.
I like how I have music under it.
It is. Very impressive.
This whole podcast is becoming rather professional.
It makes me, happy, even though there is going to be a Full House sequel on Netflix.
I've never watched an episode of Full House.
You're probably better off that way.
You know how else you know that we're professional?
That London celebrates the Monty Python reunion by putting a 50-foot dead parrot in Potter's Field Park.
What does that have to do with us being professional?
I'm just offering it there for a, conversation starter.
We're more professional than we were 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I don't know about that.
We're up on the YouTubes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You can go and listen to this podcast on the YouTube.
Cool. What's it under?
It's under Solitaire Rose, of course.
Neat.
Actually, just do a search for Corey Strode.
Which a lot of NSA and FBI alerts have done.
And you'll find me, and then you click on that, and you'll see videos. You click on that.
Oh, videos. You know what you should do?
There's our videos.
You should just put up a picture of Christina Hendricks just for the entire, and maybe switch it with a cup of blue pee or something back and forth, just so people know it's us.
But we're converting our last podcast to a video right now. It's at 38%, and at the rate my computer's going, it'll be done probably by Saturday.
Holy God. Throw up them there spoiler warnings. I'm going to spoil a comic book for you.
Uh-oh.
Apparently,
there you go. There's the spoiler music.
Apparently, in all new X-Men number 40 on sale last week or tomorrow from when we're recording this podcast, one of the original X-Men characters will be gay. I wonder which.
However,
one.
The current version will not be gay.
Yes. Damn you, McCoy.
So what they're trying to figure out.
Gay Jim.
The fanboys are trying to figure out, And for me, it's really simple, but the fanboys are like, did he change? No. We have to remember Marvel time travel rules. Even though everything's all messed up, Marvel time travel rules, you can never go back to your actual past.
Now, depending on how well this plays in the regular media, this comic could be hot, although not as hot as that Alpha Flight from years ago.
How much is that worth now? That Alpha Flight 106, one of the worst comics I've ever read, where in the middle of a big fight, North Star screams as he's punching someone, I am Jay!
How much you got in your pocket?
Right now, about 77 cents.
Take away about 15 cents. It's about what it's worth.
Okay. Because I remember there was the big gay wedding in the X-Men almost a year ago, and no one seemed to care about that.
Oh. Well, the thing was, this is the first time that I think a quote, major character had come out being gay, and it caught the news cycle because whatever was going on was very boring. And, of course, nobody knew it was going to be such a big comic because it essentially was a fill-in issue. And I just remember the night before calling Dan over at Hot Comics and saying, if you got an extra one, would you pull it? And he goes, oh, man, we've been taking calls on this all day. No guarantees. I said, no, that's fine. I just, I'm watching it on NBC News. I'd like to maybe get a copy of it. And, of course, it went up to about $20, $30, $40, $50 zillion. And now you might find it in your local cheese box.
Yeah. That's the thing about a lot of these books that hit big in the news media. The death of Captain America, I doubt that's worth a whole lot of money. The Obama Spider-Man issue.
No, that one's still up there. The first print anyways. That's up there a little bit.
Death of Superman.
$10.
Yeah. Not exactly. Well, for a comic that's 23 years old.
Don't do the math.
I do the math for a comic that's 23 years old. Yeah, you should have invested in Apple stock instead.
Star Trek trivia. Corey, what was the final nail in the coffin that made NBC cancel Star Trek for good?
Gene Roddenberry being a jerk?
No, that was actually what started it. But there was one thing that finally cemented it.
That the ratings kept going down?
No, that's actually one of the great myths, because...
No. The ratings, they weren't terrible, but they weren't going
up. They were in second place consistently. See, that's right. One of the great myths about Star Trek is that, the ratings went down. Yeah, the ratings dropped when they moved them from Thursday to Friday, because they were against powerhouses both night. Bewitched, which was like always the winner, and then the Friday night movie, which usually got pretty close to 40% of the audience, if not more. Star Trek always came in 25 to 30, but they were number two. They were always number two. It was never the ratings that sunk Star Trek. The question was, NBC had to decide, did they want to take something that they had was still pulling in number two ratings, and did they want to move it to another time spot where it would conceivably get better ratings? And we talked about earlier how what got Roddenberry finally to walk away from Star Trek was they had promised them the prime Monday spot. Well, that went to Laugh-In because they liked the Laugh-In producer more than they liked Gene Roddenberry. They being NBC. Well, before Star Trek took in its final batch of programs, and we're talking, script treatments for eventual programming, they were thinking maybe they might move it to Thursday. It might have been Tuesday. It was one of those T's, but there was one person standing in their way. Jerry Lewis. He had his own show, the Jerry Lewis Show, and the way the contract was written was that NBC, in order to move the Jerry Lewis Show, would have had to buy him out. Now, the problem was is that the Jerry Lewis show was sinking badly. I mean, nobody was watching it. Star Trek, despite NBC's attempt to kill it, was still holding on at number two. They're thinking, well, if we moved it over, maybe it would get bigger ratings and maybe it would renew and get better. Jerry Lewis basically said, well, that's fine, but you got to buy me out. The cost of buying him out would have been way more than just letting him run his two seasons and letting the show finish. So Jerry Lewis kept his time slot. Star Trek was not renewed, faded into oblivion. Meantime, they still had to finish their final six episodes, knowing this was it, baby. And that's your Star Trek trivia for today.
Okay.
Yeah, there's always been, I always love that ratings suck. Well, yeah, but they were always number two.
Well, a lot of the reason why they say that is because for
it's a better
much,
story.
Well, from the middle of the third season on, Gene Roddenberry would say, and this was one of his lines, you read it in every interview, we didn't sell enough toilet paper for the blah, 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 blah.
The thing was, is they were still
and when the,
a legitimate
when the creator
phenomena.
Says it, people are going to go, oh, okay.
Yeah. Especially since when he was saying it, nobody really cared. You know, nobody was going to go back and call NBC on the carpet for it or anything.
Well, and if you look at the numbers.
Which they do in that book, These Are the Voyages.
Right. The drop-off was not as steep as the Batman show. The Batman show, in the middle of the second season, the drop-off was unbelievably steep. With Star Trek, it was a slow erosion over time.
And the other problem was...
Yes, they were still in second place, but they went from second place, almost first place, to second place, getting close to third. Whereas with the Batman TV show, in the middle of the second season, the novelty had worn off. And the ratings just did a drop. So that when you watch the third season, which they brought in Batgirl to try to goose ratings. But, Joe, when you watch that third season, you'll notice that the amount of money they are spending on the show drops unbelievably fast.
Yeah.
To the point where a lot of the villains' lairs are, okay, it's a black soundstage where they just had a few props and hung a few things.
Well, even Star Trek, you notice the quality dropping. But despite that, They still delivered a couple good shows. I'm still reading through the final couple shows, and the producer, and I can't remember his name at the moment, he actually was able to get the show under budget, something it hadn't done in the first two seasons. And despite the fact that now they were under budget, it was just too much was gone. They just let it go. It's always one of those what ifs, you know, what if they had moved it to Monday night? What if they were able to move it despite the Jerry Lewis show? Would Star Trek have gone on to a fourth season? They were actually doing scripts, getting ready, but, and some of them showed up in the animated show. Other ones got fleshed out into various things.
My concern as a fan would have been, if you look at the third season, it's very hit or miss.
Oh, big time. I'm just reading about the space hippies, and the author is trying to convince me if you get past the silliness, it actually has something relevant to say. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. It's just way too bad.
Just because you have something relevant to say doesn't mean what you're saying is entertaining.
Well, that's the interesting thing about reading these books where they talk about behind the scenes, because they start with the concept that they had and how it eventually gets watered down to what we saw on the screen. And, you know, we know Harlan Ellison. I mean, he was a big one on his script that got watered down, City on the Edge of Forever. Even David Gerrold, I can't remember the name of the episode he did third season that got watered down so bad by the time I got to the teleplot play. It was the one with the city in the sky and the people who were serving the city in the sky.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the name of the episode. The original concept was very strong about the poor serving the rich, which was very prevalent in California because you had all these people in Beverly Hills being served by people who lived in Watts. And the people in Watts couldn't afford to live in Beverly Hills, and it just created a big tension there. And so he made a script of it, but by the time it got to where it was going, you see a little bit of it, but David was going more for a ending like City on the Edge of Forever, you know, where it we're not leaving this planet in a good shape, but, you know, we're just leaving. And it ended up turning more into a happy, feel-good action picture type thing, which wasn't bad because it was actually one of the better episodes of the season, other than that whole, you know, Spock getting hot for some hot-looking, which wasn't in the original script. That was written in by the producer because they were trying to bring in more women to watch this because they figured women are about the only people watching Friday Night. So let's have a little bit more romance. And everybody was hot for Spock, so let's have him kind of flirty type person with, whatever her name was.
Yeah, because that's, all I could think is if they would have went to a fourth season, Star Trek probably would not be remembered as fondly.
Nah, not the way it was going, because they were kept, you know, we're going to drop how much they're spending per episode and
the scripts weren't as good. And
no, they kept getting watered down.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I think if X-Files would have ended when, David Duchovny left, people would be so hungry for that thing to come back. Now, X-Files is coming back for 6 episodes, and it's, okay, I guess. People aren't jumping up and down for it.
There was something I was reading on crack.com, and I can't find it. They were talking about weird things that happen after the show went off the air, and apparently Roddenberry put together kind of like an inside Star Trek LP, where it was basically interviews with the different staff. And one of them, he talked with Mark Leonard, who played Spock's dad. And it was an interview. And then halfway through it, they switched. And it became like Roddenberry was like the Starfleet ambassador. And he was asking Mark Leonard about how did Vulcans have sex? And Mark played it like he was. You know, as if, because it was like, well, you know, they were very, they kept it real under the, well, they didn't really talk about it that much. And now he was in there trying to, and he kept coming back and how did you do it and blah, blah, blah. And of course, it's all on YouTube. Just like you can go on YouTube and find the punk rock band that the Craig Kilborn and, who's the latest Doctor Who?
Peter Capaldi.
Yep, they were both in a punk rock band before they became famous. You can find that on YouTube, just like you can find our podcast on YouTube.
Everything's on YouTube. Woo-hoo. I think one of the things that Star Trek kind of should let people know is go out on top.
Yeah. Well, again, this was just a TV show. It wasn't the phenomena that it is now. And I think that's, I haven't finished the book, but that was one of the things when I read Shatner's book is, you know, he went off and he was working, whatever, and he kept hearing about Star Trek. To him, it was like a 3-year show or whatever that was canceled and he moved on, but it would never die. And it just, now it's, I don't know what to make of it now. I mean, I know we've got one more movie and then there's, I don't know. I keep hearing rumors of a TV show or not. But I think the biggest problem with the Star Trek movies are the original Star Trek characters are pretty much invested in their characters. I mean, you're always going to find, maybe, T'Kay, well, he would jump at a chance to do Sulu. You're always going to find they'll always want to go back. But I don't see the current movie guys necessarily, you know what, I'm going to make a career out of doing Star Trek as Kirk. And yeah, the movies were fine and wonderful, but we're never going to get that same feeling like we did with the TV show. Because when you have the movies come about, you only have two and a half hours to tell the story. There's not going to be a lot of character development. So we've got, you know, Spock and Uhura are hot for each other. Ooh, wow. And we got Kirk being kind of an asshole and really not really worth commanding. And Chekhov's just this little kid. And Scotty's a little funny guy. And, you know, the movies are fun as they are, but they're not really going to be... I can't see these movies being fondly remembered as the original Star Trek or even as, like, Star Wars is.
I'm going to disagree with you, and I think it's a generational thing. And I will point to Star Wars. Joe, when I mention Star Wars prequels, you don't exactly go, oh, yeah! But there is a generation now who has seen them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, instead of we saw it 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
12. Yeah, yeah.
And the people in that generation see it differently. I've read a number of blogs, some by, you know, parents who introduce the movies to their kids, and some by people who actually have grew up with them in that order. They see them very, very differently than we do. For them, you know, 3 is their big moment, because there it's like, that's when Anakin turns evil and when all this stuff happens, and they don't have the fondness for episode 4, Star Wars, that we do. They see it as a very different story, and it's going to be theirs from now on.
But do you see Christopher Pine and company coming back when they're 50 years old doing Star Trek 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, etc.?
I could see them more like the Harry Potter kids, where now these people are identified with this. They may come back and do another one every few years. But more people have seen Simon Pegg as Scotty than have seen him in all his other movies. For me, Simon Pegg is always Shaun of the Dead and the TV show Spaced. But to somebody who's in their early 20s, he's Scotty. He's their Scotty. Much like how, if you talk to people, one of my friends, to him, James Bond is Roger Moore. Makes me physically ill when he says stuff like that, but that's what happens when you have these movies now that are cross-generational. Joe, who is Sherlock Holmes? What actor is Sherlock Holmes?
Well, see, I don't really have an actor as Sherlock Holmes, so I might not be the guy to ask.
But when you think Sherlock Holmes, what actor comes to mind?
I don't really have – I honestly don't have – it's not a character that excites me when I – Sherlock Holmes, let's go see a movie. It doesn't work for me personally.
But that's kind of how these other characters are becoming. For my grandmother, it's Basil Rathbone. For me, it's Benedict Cumberbatch. For other people, it's going to be Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. The same thing is going to happen with the Marvel movies. They're going to be making Marvel movies forever now. Robert Downey Jr. is in his early 50s. We're not going to want to see him as Iron Man when he's 70. They're going to have actors move into that role and take it over. That's what happens when, okay, Tarzan. When do you think Tarzan? How many different Tarzans have there been? Most kids now, you say Tarzan, they think the animated version. Other people, it's Johnny Weissmuller. Other people, it's Ron Eli from the TV show. Or Lassie, who's the kid with Lassie. That's one of the things about fiction when it's played by actors, whereas in comics, yes, you get different versions of Batman. You get different versions of Superman. You get, in my opinion, you get different versions of Spider-Man and those characters, too, when new creators come on. But when I say, Joe, who is the best Spider-Man artist, who do you say?
Or who's the best Spider-Man actor? Or which Batman did you like the best?
Yep.
So Paramount basically, by doing this, is breaking away from the original casts and saying, yeah, we can reboot this franchise when we want. I'm just curious to see if this TV program, will it be in a Star Trek universe, or will it just be, hey, this is, you know, in other words, Star Trek is Kirk, Spock, Enterprise.
To you?
No. That's what it is now. There is no next generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise at all.
But it's also generational in that regard.
Will
to
they
you,
be able
when
to
you
redo
think Star
that?
Trek? When I say Star Trek, what immediately comes to mind, first thing that comes to mind is Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
And
people
see,
in
I
their
would
20s
think,
and 30s.
I would say next gen for me because I only watched them in reruns. The next gen was more exciting to me because it was like, oh my gosh, they're rebooting a franchise. And everybody was all worried it wouldn't work.
But that's just it. Generationally, Star Trek Next Generation, it's... I can't tell you how many people you say Star Trek, first thing that comes into their head is Picard and Data. Now, are the characters as strong and iconic? To me, no.
That's a different argument, yeah.
But to other people, when you say Star Trek, they think of that. It's kind of like when you mention comic artists. When someone says, who is the best Batman artist? I can tell their age by who they choose. Because to people around my age, well, it's Neil Adams. Of course it's Neil Adams. God damn, it's Neil Adams. To other people, it's going to be Jim Lee. To other people, it's going to be Greg Capullo. To other people, it's going to be Carmine Infantino from the 60s. That's one of the cool things about these characters that last a long time.
Well, let's go into let's talk about the Star Wars trailer since we're kind of talking about.
Before we get to the Star Wars trailer, this is going to come up in geeking. But Joe, do you have the Ultimate Marvel? Marvel Unlimited.
What do you mean? Do I have it?
Yeah, are you subscribing?
Oh no, no, I haven't jumped on it yet. I'm going to, though.
You know what dropped the same day as the Star Wars trailer? 500+ Star Wars comics on Marvel Unlimited. All of the Marvel stuff, all of the, you know, the first run of the Marvel stuff. It looks to me like all of the Dark Horse stuff and the first issue of the new Star Wars book, even though it's only a couple of months old.
Cool.
The same day as the trailer, Marvel Unlimited. Boom. If you think that they aren't coordinating this perfectly, you're crazy.
We've talked about it before. Disney knows their stuff when it comes to coordination. I mean, isn't it? They've got some Star Wars fest going on out in Anaheim even as we talk.
Yeah, that was where the trailer debuted.
Yeah. Disney?
It debuted the day before. Here you go. It's Star Wars Celebration. Boom. Here you go, kids.
Oh, yeah. No, Disney, they have their stuff together when it comes to this. And we've talked about that before because they're a horizontal company. I mean, as soon as they got Star Wars, they got everybody involved. Books, comics, movies, merchandising, theme parks. They're all on the same page because they're all moving Star Wars. I read somewhere Disney stock bounced $2 billion up because of the Star Wars trailer. And people talking Star Wars, getting excited, it boosted the stock prices. So if you didn't get your Disney stock, movie's not out yet. Still might be a good time to invest some. So you obviously saw the trailer.
Yes, I did.
And what'd you think?
It's a teaser trailer, so it's just images. Well, the actual trailer, what they do, and they did this with the Marvel stuff, they're doing this a lot with things now, it's... Here's one or two teasers, then you get a full trailer. I think they put in enough stuff to get people talking. To me, the reaction to it was far more interesting than the trailer itself. MSNBC.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Hayes did a did 2 10-minute segments on this 90-second teaser trailer.
Now, I haven't
fans are going
it.
Through in detail, blowing up individual pictures, going through in every detail, discussing it. We are so hungry for a Star Wars movie now.
Is it true there's that scene where the Millennium Falcon's being chased into the engine by a TIE fighter, and right before they get in, way down on the bottom of the engine, there's like two guys in black with a giant comb?
Oh.
No, I've seen pictures of it, and I haven't gone back to the trailer, but it's like they threw in a little space ball.
I doubt it.
I think these guys are nuts. I mean, you got to remember, you can go back now and they have all these little things in movies where like R2-D2 and C-3PO were on a wall where Indiana Jones was standing. I can see them doing that. I haven't gone back and replayed the trailer and freeze framed it. But, you know, the picture's there on the internet that it's there, and nobody has come out to say, no, this is fake. So I'm wondering about that. So needless to say, we're geeking for Star Wars. Have you seen the Fantastic Four trailer?
Yes.
And what do you think about that?
I have always been one of these people who I'm going to withhold judgment till the movie comes out. The trailer looks fun.
I think it does too. I'm a little more positive on it than I was when the whole, you know, announcements came. These are the actors. Here's the plot line, blah, blah, blah.
My favorite comment someone made is, after seeing the Fantastic Four trailer, I've gone from there's no way I'll ever watch this to, okay, I won't turn it off if it shows up on my TV. One thing that I find hilarious, have you seen the poster?
Mm-mm.
The poster has at the bottom, from the studio that brought you X-Men Days of Future Past.
Ooh.
It's Fox! They could also put on there, from the studio that brings you Fox News.
Or Star Wars, the original Star Wars.
Yeah! I hate it when it's from the studio that brought you. The studio has nothing to do with it.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe they have something going on here. We could do that. Yep. Crazy Comics and Stories Podcast from the people who brought you Salmonella. I don't know.
From the people who brought you Hot Comics St. Paul.
From the people who brought you the best dressed man in comics.
There you go.
See, we can do this name for the people who actually enjoyed Batman and Robin the first time.
No.
Well, no, I was with Nick and we were pretty giddy and we were doing our own miniature, you know, mystery theater in the background.
I was trying to get out of the theater and my son kept going, but it's Batman.
It's Batman.
And this is the kid who, when Catwoman came out about 20 minutes in, he said, I'm going to go play Dance Dance Revolution.
Speaking of Batman, what about the Superman, Batman, Superman trailer?
One of the problems with the DC stuff is everything that comes out confirms my problem with the DC Cinematic Universe.
You're 10 years behind?
It's even worse than that. It's like they went to the comics from 91, 92 and said, oh, wow, this dark and gritty stuff, people like that.
I think this one's going to be good because it's universally been panned by every comic fanboy I've talked to. And I think that they might have something going there, only because since they had to have Superman kill and do all this collateral damage, this might be the reaction they need to get Superman back on the light side of things. Or not. Maybe somebody just read the fourth issue of Dark Knight and decided, yeah, this is the way to go. Let's have him fight out.
Yeah. I'm just tired of the dark and gritty being grafted onto characters that aren't dark and gritty. Because someone said, well, everybody likes the Daredevil series and it's dark and gritty. Yeah, because the Daredevil comic from 1978 on has been a crime comic.
I'm going to wait and see
Superman,
on this one.
They keep trying to make Superman dark and gritty, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work for the character. It's like when they try to make the original Captain Marvel serious and I hate when they do that. It's okay, you've got the character. Use the character the way he's been done. With Daredevil, you could actually say that Miller went back to the beginning and kind of did a back to basics with it.
I still think it'll be good.
Superman needs to be the blue Boy Scout. Not every character has to be dark and conflicted. And no. And it almost is like they're doubling down on the stupidity of Pa Kent in Man of Steel, where you need to hide what you can do because what you do could be turned into something horrible. No, Pa Kent was the one who said, you've got these great powers, you need to help people.
All I think of is the listening to you and everybody else. It sounds like the same arguments that were given when Michael Keaton was announced as Batman. I just think, wait and see. Again, it's a teaser trailer. I actually, this trailer made me more interested in wanting to see it. Because before it was pretty much, and I was never a anti-Affleck person. I was just kind of like, you could put anybody in a cowl and have them growl and they'll be Batman. You know, it's not that big a deal. But we'll see where they go with it afterwards. Are they going to continue the dark and gritty, or is this going to be the redemption? And more importantly, how does Wonder Woman fit into it? Maybe she's the one that's going to get them to knock over their heads and say, guys, shape up.
Here's the thing that makes me think that nobody has any faith in this. Joe, when's the release date?
It's a couple of years, isn't it? 16?
March 25th, 2016.
Yeah, see, I've heard,
March is not when you put out a movie that's going to be huge.
Every time I hear the collective fanboys groan, I think they're wrong. And I guess that's just my bottom line here. If more people would have been, if it wasn't so universally panned by the trailer, I'd be thinking, you know what? This might not work. But I am so convinced the fanboys are wrong. We'll just find out in March 16th. More importantly, what about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, with Christopher Reeve and Adam West?
That movie I would watch in a heartbeat.
That trailer looked fun.
I just think they're going to double down on the Man of Steel thing. And Man of Steel just didn't... The further away you get from it, it didn't work. It made a lot of money, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so did Transformers.
But there aren't people clamoring for it.
Yeah, we'll see. There were some other trailers that popped out, but I can't find it. I thought I had them all. It was like last week was just like, hey, let's all release our trailers at once.
Well, the Batman Superman thing leaked.
I know, that was brilliant.
So they had to do an official
release. Maybe that's the problem. You know, they weren't ready to do it. Of course, they were ready to do it in Mexico. And what's with those Mexicans? I don't get it. And of course, I'll save it for freaking.
You know what? Why don't we just get to freaking and geeking? Because I've got a freaking that ties in with some of what we're talking about.
We're just going to toss out there. Remember, Free Comic Book Day is May 2nd. And this year, Corey and I have secured, through Granite City Comics, they will help us get a complete set of all the books coming out, so we can at least talk about them. Last year, we kind of tried to, but we didn't have all the books, so we couldn't really talk about them that intelligently. Can't talk about what you don't got.
So, Joe, what are you freaking on?
My daughter's going to see the Avengers before us. I mean, they get to see it a week in Europe, a week before us, and she's talked about that before she went over to Italy. Now, she promised no spoilers. The only thing is I'm not really, I don't think I'll be seeing it the weekend it comes out. I'll probably wait till the following Tuesday. I tried to get tickets. We have the Marcus Ultra Screen, which has, you know, you can call ahead, reserve a seat, and they got the great recliner chairs, and they have the full buffet experience. Most of it's sold out. The good seats are gone. So I think I'm just going to wait till afterwards. When do you plan to see it?
I am off that whole weekend. So I'll probably go see it Sunday.
Okay.
Because the crazy will be over. I could go see it on, I'll go to one of the early shows on probably Sunday after Free Comic Book Day, because you and I are going to be running around on Free Comic Book Day. And I'll just
go
see
Butch?
It early.
We're looking for you, Butch.
I'll just go see it early on Sunday.
So I'll try to see it maybe Tuesday, unless I get dragged to a midnight showing somewhere. That way we can talk about it on that podcast.
Yeah.
Cool.
And who knows? Maybe I'll be able to get in at the, what is it, the Icon Theater, the Showplace Icon Theater.
Yeah.
That one's a really nice theater, too. It's where I saw Guardians. So.
All right. So that, I'm freaking about that. So, Dana, be quiet. Another thing that drives me crazy, missing comics. I think I collect my comics fairly well. You know, I'm keeping track of what I got. But every so often, I find I'm missing comics. For example, I am missing the first two parts of the Spider-Verse, Amazing Spider-Man. I am missing, I think, part two of, there was one just called Spider-Verse. And, I'm missing part one. So I sat down, I actually got all my Spider-Verse comics in a row to read them. And then I discover I am missing some. And of course, the question is, do I need to read part one and two to enjoy it? I actually found a list online that told me what sequence to read all the comics in. Cause for some reason, I've got almost everything. I've got Spider-Verse, 2099, Spider-Woman, Edge of Spider-Verse, and the Superior Spider-Man, but I'm missing two of the Amazing Spider-Mans, and I'm not sure if I should wait till I find them, or what do you think, Corey? Should I skip one and two, or just keep digging and wait till I find them?
Yeah, you could find them. They shouldn't be that hard to find.
I actually haven't seen my collection. For some reason, there was a miniseries from IDW called The Bigger Bang. I was missing issue two. For some reason, I did not order DC Vertigo Strange Sports Stories number 2. I was able to pick it up. I missed one called The Mighty Titan number 2 from Red Anvil. Maybe that's the thing, as I order number 1s and I never order number 2s. But thank God for the source and Hot Comics. I was able to, with the exception of the Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse, I was able to fill in the holes. So I'll read these and get on there. Another thing freaking out comic-wise, I hate it when people move my comics. So I had three piles sitting on a dining room table. One was stuff that I'd already read, things that I'll talk about when we get to geeking. The second one was my Spider-Verse pile. The third one were things to read. Well, when somebody moved my comics, they put it on top of a box that wasn't secure. So in the bottom pile, they put one pile. On top of that, they put the Spider-Verse. On the top of that, they put the third pile. So the bottom pile basically all bent in half. Now, I'm not super anal about my comic books, but, you know, eventually I'd like to sell them. And the problem was is all these number one Image books that I had set up to read, now they all have a nice crack and bend in the middle. You know, if I get to the point where I don't want to keep it, or more importantly, it becomes a, you know, $1,000 book like Walking Dead number 1, you know, I want to keep my shit in good shape, damn it. Stop moving my stuff. Well, why don't you put it away when you're done? I wasn't done. I missed out on Record Day, which was a kind of like a Free Comic Book Day, but for record stores. Mostly stores that sell vinyl. They had a 2 vinyl collection of the other WWE albums. Well, WWF, the wrestling album and Piledriver. And I went to find them. And of course they had them and they'd sold out because I just totally forgot. I was going to go in before work. By after work, it was too late. They are on eBay. Price is coming down. I mean, there are a couple guys had them for $200. Someone had them for $100 and $90 and $70. The cheapest price I've seen is about $40, which isn't bad because I think it originally retailed anywhere from $30 to $35. These particular albums were set out by Legendary Records, two record stores that were participating in this particular event. Some record stores kept them and are selling them on eBay. Other ones just, like Cheapo Records, they said, yeah, we got two in. They sold right away because it was a novelty thing. You know, they probably got more in of the other ones. So now I got to decide, do I want to drop $40 and pick it up on eBay or just, nothing drives me crazier than telling me I can't have it because then I want it even more. I swear, there was a whole time in the 90s when, pick a hot book, like Night Nurse 1 through 4 became the hottest books on the planet. The original Dark Shadows with the photo covers, the hottest books on the planet. Boy, a book became the hottest book on the planet. I had to find it. And of course, once I had it, I was like, okay, mission accomplished. I just turned around and sold it. It took me a long time to get that out of my system. Like now the big one is the first appearance of Deadpool in what, one of the New Mutants, 98, 99, I forget.
Yep.
Had it, but I should get it again. Ah, don't care. Let it go. So that's pretty much all I've been freaking on. My poor comics. Corey, what are you freaking on? What's got you in a tizzy? What's got you your negative on? Your Kim Kardashian type, shiny butt type, icky yucky, I want Christina Hendricks on.
You know the Hawkeye comic?
Hawkeye, yeah. I actually read number one.
It's been delayed again. Yes, the last issue of Hawkeye's been delayed now until the middle of June. And one of the editors at Marvel had a really good joke about it when someone said, hey, you've delayed Hawkeye, the last issue of Hawkeye again. What is wrong? What is going on? He said, if you ask again, we're going to delay it another month. one of the things, Matt Fraction, all of his books are now late because he left Marvel to go do creator-owned stuff over at Image.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff is running late, too. I think he's one of these guys. He's got too much on his plate. He had too many ideas. And stuff's just not getting done. And I don't know if it's him delaying or the artist delaying or what other delay it is. But I like that Marvel's already started a second Hawkeye book. And it's going to have, like, its fourth issue out before the final issue of the first Hawkeye series is going to be out.
Funny.
So that's depressing, and it's freaking me. Second thing is ties in a lot with what you said about fan outrage and fans going nuts. There seems to be on all over, even on Marvel discussions, fans are going, why doesn't Batman just kill the Joker? And it's very heated, and normally I ignore this kind of thing, but if you follow Tom Brevoort's Tumblr where he answers fan questions, you look through, two out of three questions have to do with this. And he's kind of snarky, but he needs to quit answering these questions. There's only one answer for why won't Batman kill the Joker? Because the Joker is Batman's most popular villain.
Yeah.
And you don't get rid of something that makes you a lot of money.
Don Thompson from the Much Miss Comic Buyer's Guide said that's why he never enjoyed Joker stories. Because in real life, yes, the Joker would have been blown away 3 days from Sunday. There is no way a guy like that would have been allowed to exist. The minute he escaped, someone would have taken him out. And they actually did a Batman story where somebody did take out the Joker, shot him right in the chest or face, whatever it was, and the Joker was out for a year. There were even scenes where, like, Joker wanted to react and get up to something, but he was so petrified because he had been shot that he just sat back. So it's been addressed. And yes, it's always going to be an elephant in the room, but this is just where you're going to have to just suspend your disbelief if you're going to be able to enjoy the stories. I think it was best said by Alan Moore in Killing Joke when Batman, when the Joker, who had crippled Barbara Gordon and spent the entire issue torturing James Gordon with it, and Gordon got up and told Batman, bring him in alive. We have to show him that our way works, because he knew damn well that Batman probably would have killed him. That, to me, is really the bottom line. I don't know where James Gordon is in the current Batman, because I haven't read it in a long, long time, but he was always the one. Yeah, sure, he'd bust a few laws, but they were always brought in alive because they had to show the Joker their way works.
Well, and people seem to forget you don't want your fiction to be absolutely realistic.
Yes, there is. Ben Affleck says it in Jane and Silent Bob Strike Back. People, these are fictional. Fictional. Yeah. And if you can't let that go, don't read a Joker story. Just skip it. Put it in your collection if you must buy it, and never read it.
I've also read the first few issues of Convergence.
I'm still waiting for mine to arrive.
You know what the good thing is about the first issues of Convergence? You read the first issue of Convergence, and it tells you what the premise is. And then as you read each first issue, you get that scene, that five-page scene where they explain.
Yeah.
Again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And I know that DC has some sort of problem with how Marvel does the recap page. It was recently an editor did that, and everybody on the lower levels said, wow, this is great. It's really good. It's really well put together. And once it got up to the VP and editor-in-chief level, that editor was told never to do it again as she wanted to keep her job. But putting the recap in the story means that when these trade paperbacks come out, you're going to be beating your head against the wall. I've read this sequence now 20 times. Every time I say, you know, I'm going to give DC a chance.
Give DCs a chance.
They pull something like this.
All we are saying is give DC a chance.
So, yeah, that's
Corey, you saw
that's
my,
what I'm geeking on.
You saw my post-convergent DC list. Do you remember how many comics were on it?
4.
Exactly. And I haven't even gotten Convergence yet because I haven't got my box day. And I went nuts and just, I said, you know, I bought the two issue miniseries because by the time I figured the ones I wanted to see, Discount Comic Service had such a great deal. I said, whatever, I'll just order it all. It's only 2 issues for 2 months. Mostly because, and I'm hoping this works, I want to see these characters again. I want to see the pre-Crisis characters. I want to see the Crisis Supergirl. I want to see Marv Wolfman writing Teen Titans. I want to see these characters again. There's some of them I don't really care about. Yeah, like most of the Zero Hour, the Flashpoint. But, you know, again, they're just 2-issue miniseries. I put my money on the line. I hope I didn't waste it. Have you read any of the 1-2 miniseries yet?
Yeah, that's where this is.
Oh.
Where it's okay. Here's the setup, and the setup is kind of confusing. The setup for each of these is, you know how Brainiac has captured these cities before their universe or world is destroyed. Whether it's a universe or a world depends on which comic it is, because the writers say both.
Sorry, I'm typing a quick note to comic service, see if I can't cancel my order.
And everybody in the dome doesn't have superpowers anymore. Until now, we're going to battle for supremacy, and only one will live. And one champion is chosen from each city, and they all get their powers back. So it really doesn't read like it's pre-crisis to me, or pre-flashpoint, or pre-this. It feels very much like, okay, here's this city with these characters in it. And so much recap.
Ugh.
Oh my God, so much recap.
Folks, I'm here to announce on eBay I'll be selling my Convergence set. Well, if anything, you'll have given me a freaking for a month ago from now when I get a chance to read it.
Well, enough of the freaking. Let's get to geeking. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving?
Corey, you convinced me. When I stopped by Hot Comics last week, I picked up Gru 1 through 4. Haven't read them yet, but then again, I just went and dug out some of my old Gru because it's pretty much the same story over and over. So either way, I'm putting my. I figure I'm going to enjoy that. As far as reading goes, I'm trying to catch up on Black Vortex. Apparently, I'm missing Nova number 28, which I don't know if it's out or not because no comic store seemed to have it. So maybe it's just out of sequence or not published. It may not have anything to do with anything, but as they are actually written down as chapters, I figure I better go find it before I go too far. And the Nova 28 is chapter 8. And then it goes into chapter 9. So I'm kind of stuck on Black Vortex, but it's okay. I'm enjoying it. Before I did that, I read Guardians Team Up 1 and 2. Okay, you're explaining the characters. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I did read Hawkeye, the all-new Hawkeye number 1. I'm not sure where I got it. I might have gotten it just to get it. It's not enough for me to read it. I might pick it up and trade later on as it goes. But if that's all you're going to have for Hawkeye, I suppose it's not a bad way to go. Amazing Spider-Man 16.1 set up for the Gang War storyline. And that's pretty much all it is a Gang War storyline. I read Nameless 1 and 2 from Grant Morrison, Chris Burnham. Anytime you put Grant Morrison on there, you really got to have your mind ready for it. I mean, I had to reread it twice. The first time I was like, okay, I am lost. Let's go back and try again. But it's definitely worth picking up, either in book form. And there's only 2 issues out so far, so you should be able to find it. Still plowing through The Little Mermaid from Grimm Fairy Tales. A lot of boobies. It's not bad. It's not quite what I was expecting, but then again, what is? Postal 1 and 2, again from Top Cow Image. I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. It's a story about a town where pretty much if you were a criminal, that's where you can go. As long as you don't commit crimes, you're fine. The mayor of the town has a son who's a little bit mentally he's not like a special needs person, but he sees everything and he's never quite sure how to react to everything. There's a big internal monologue, like when he's sitting across from a girl that he really likes, but he doesn't say anything because he was told, think things through 3 times before you say anything. Well, what happened in Postal is there's a crime that happens and pretty much everybody's confused as to what happened because really there shouldn't be anything going on. The outside authorities also are aware of this particular town, and it's called Eden is the name of the town, and they want to shut it down because they know all the criminals are going there, even though nothing seems to be happening there. Something's not right. Oh, did I mention the special guy? He's a postman. Hence the name Postal.
Ah, okay.
I picked up a copy of Red One by a bunch of people named Dorison, Xavier, Terry, and Rachel. I had a lot of fun with this one. It was good reading. It wasn't one of those that you got through in like 2-3 minutes. The gist of the story is that Comrade Red One is a very attractive female who is probably as close to a super soldier as the communists are going to get. And she is sent on a special mission to go to America. Because what's happened in America is apparently a supervillain has broken free. And by what they want is her to go in, defeat the supervillain, and that'll make people think that the Soviets are okay. And this is basically her setup as to her first days in America. It's a different history. It takes place in the 70s, I think, because it took me a while to figure that out, because they're talking Stalin, and then they say, well, Brezhnev wants you to go, and then you're like, oh, okay, that takes place then. So basically the story becomes what happens when America's greatest superhero is a Russian spy. Good art, good story. One issue out so far. It's one of those I'm going to keep my eyes open and pick it up. Every so often, Discount Comic Book Service discounts comics, and they're just clearancing them out. So I picked up like a second print of one called Copperhead, and I finally got around to reading it, and it is good. It's kind of like a space western set in a future planet. One of the marshals who goes to this planet to become the marshal drags her son along. The huge, I don't know what he looks like, a wombat, but he's kind of he's much, much bigger than an average human, who is the deputy who thought he would have been appointed sheriff, is there as well. And he's not really all that happy that she's there. A lot of the aliens aren't happy that she's there. The rich people, in other words, the people who, you know, in a classic Western, there's always the rich rancher. He's not happy she's there. And, of course, a crime occurs. And they're up to issue 7, I think. I've read issue 1, and I enjoyed it. And I think I'm going to actually go hunt down the other issues or pick up the trade that came out. I read through a Batman Phantom Stranger that I picked up at the Comic-Con I went to a couple weeks ago. Fortunately, it was one of my books on the bottom of the pile, so my nice Baxter stock book has a big fold in it. It was okay. I don't think it needed to be in Baxter format. And since I only paid a buck for it, I think I got my money's worth. The final thing I read was Astro City Victory, the latest trade paperback out from Astro City, which essentially is Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman getting together for their team-up. In this case, Samaritan, Winged Fury, and Confessor. And it's a fantastic read. Everything, I can't recommend Astro City enough. So if you haven't picked it up, go out, pick up the first graphic novel, or if you're lucky enough to find the comics, read it. It's always fun. I'll rave about Astro City every so often, because every so often I will reread them, and you'll see he drops these little hints that pay off later on. And if you're not paying attention, well, you can always go back and reread it and catch it. TV-wise, my wife and I finished West Wing, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was a hell of a ride. I know, and in a way, I'm kind of glad I didn't realize that the creator left after the fourth season, because the change in quality was more subtle. I didn't realize that, oh, man, this sucks because such and such is gone. So I was able to enjoy West Wing all the way to the end. It was always one of those things like, you know, no matter what they choose storyline, especially when they got into the final election, Either way it goes, you're always going to have, it's like a real election almost. You're going to have some people going, oh, come on, the Democrat won. Oh, come on, the Republican won. Really, that's not what would happen. I just sat back and enjoyed it. It was a fun series. But, you know, I was a political science major, so I was kind of attuned to it. My wife loves it because she kind of lives the life that, like, CJ ran, you know, always running around trying to keep things going. And, of course, John Spencer died the final season, and I did not know how they were going to address it. And when they finally did, it was like a punch in the stomach. So it was fun. I mean, that's one thing. I always hear about all these great shows. I don't want to know about them because when I get to them, I want to go into them, you know, eyes wide shut. eBay side of things have been kind of quiet. Haven't really done much. I won a last week I talked about the X-Men comic, Be Extra Safe with the X-Men from Blockbuster, that was signed by the late, great Herb Trimp. Near as I can tell, the only reason he signed it is because Wolverine was on the cover. He had nothing to do with what was inside it. A lot of 80s art. And the other thing I got was a one-of-a-kind sketch from an artist, Robert A. Krause. He took one of the Supergirl postage stamps and then drew Supergirl headshot around it, which I thought was kind of unique. He did that with some of the other stamps too, and most of his stuff's on eBay except the Supergirl one because I won it. That's pretty much all I'm geeking on. The weather's cold and crappy outside, so I'm going to do what I did last week when it was really nice and warm. I'm going to grab my comics, I'm going to sit on my three season porch, unless it's cold, then I'll bring a blanket, and I'm going to read comics the rest of the day. Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you happy? What's got you thrilled?
A few more first issues. I've read the first two issues of the latest Project Superpowers reboot. Project Superpowers is a bunch of public domain characters that Dynamite has decided to use
publicly. Dominate?
And they handed them over to Warren Ellis.
Ooh.
And the first two issues, the plot is very much a standard opening plot sort of thing, in that weird things are happening, people are dying in strange ways. And because I'm reading a lot of first issues, oh my God, that seems to be how everyone is starting their stuff.
Wait. Is there a super secret government agency plotting in the background to destroy the hero that just appeared?
Not yet.
Okay, that must be an Image thing.
But the thing I like about what Ellis does is he's focusing on the human aspect of it. And he's making it, even though it's a very standard issue plot, he's at least making it interesting enough that you're being drawn in. And I think in a lot of ways that's the difference between somebody who's a great writer and somebody who's just okay. He can take a plot you've seen a whole bunch of times and still make it interesting enough that you want to continue reading. The art is really good. Ellis is really good at first issues. He uses dialogue and action to define character rather than a big info dump. You learn about these characters by what they do and what they say rather than, I am this person and this is who I am and this is what they do. And my only concern is with Warren Ellis, you know that he's going to lose interest and wander off.
Are you saying he fell?
Ah, the crickets are still around.
I saw your cat's picture. He looked a little hungry.
So I'm going to be going to trade paperbacks on this. And I hate to say it, but Warren Ellis is a guy who I have learned, don't buy the stuff till the story's done. Because otherwise you may be buying comics where you get half a story. And he wanders off. Maybe somebody else will finish it. Maybe they won't. You just never know. But if they're going to be using these characters and they really want, Dynamite seems to really want to use these characters, this is a good way to make them interesting and sort of set up this superhero universe for them. You already talked about the all-new Hawkeye. I've read the first two issues. I love the art. I absolutely love the art. It's a two-pronged story.
Oh,
part
yeah.
of it is a flashback to Hawkeye's childhood, and part of it is a modern story that really it's the thing about the Matt Fraction, Dave Aja Hawkeye was this is what he does when he's not a superhero. This is a superhero story. They're going into a Hydra base and they find something there. But it ties in with his childhood. So the art for his childhood is done in this very watercolor aspect. And the modern is kind of more standard. But it's just an excellent, excellent use of the art to give a feel to the story. And while it's different from the Fraction Hawkeye, I do still like this one. Marvel has really made Hawkeye one of their more interesting characters.
Yeah.
Another Marvel book I have gotten caught up on is Ant-Man. Ant-Man, one of the things about a lot of Marvel stuff is you really have to know what they're going to jettison and what they're going to keep. With Ant-Man, they've really jettisoned a lot of his history since his origin. Because they want it to be more familiar to people who see the movie. So if you've been a Scott Lang fan and you've been following him for years and years and years, yeah, you're going to get a little irritated by the fact that, hey, they've kind of gotten rid of everything. But I like the feel of the book. He's trying to put his life together. He has started a detective agency. And he's starting to gather these kind of has-been villains to help him. One of the it has that same feel. Go ahead.
The superior foes of Spider-Man are out of work.
That's what I was going to say. It has that same feel of superior foes of Spider-Man. His first person who works with him is Grizzly. If you remember Grizzly, which was a guy in a bear suit.
Yeah. Can't bear it.
So it's got that same sort of feel. And I don't know. I'm going to stick with it. And the last new comic I read was the TV tie-in book, Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty is a series on cartoon on Adult Swim by the guy who does Community. And I think the comic is written by one of the writers on the TV series. It feels exactly the same as the TV show. It's the best TV tie-in book since The Simpsons. So if you like the Rick and Morty cartoon show, you will love this book. It looks like it. It reads like it. It's a lot of fun. It's very twisted humor, but like I said, if you like the TV show, you're going to like the comic. Although I look at the sales of The Simpsons, and Simpsons has probably 10 times the viewers as Rick and Morty and only sells about maybe 10,000 copies if it's lucky. I don't think this book's going to sell that well because really, if you don't watch the series, you're not going to buy the book, and there aren't that many people watching the series. So, and then the last thing I read that I really enjoyed, I have the trade paperback for Black Dynamite. And I have talked often about how Black Dynamite is one of my favorite movies and one of my favorite cartoon shows. Sadly, it was canceled. This reprints the one-shot and the four-part miniseries, which is written and drawn like an early 70s Marvel book, except it's very over the top to the point where Sal Buscema inked the book. It's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen Black Dynamite yet, go get that DVD and watch it. Then watch it with the commentary because the commentary is just as good as the movie. I don't know if there will be any more Black Dynamite, sadly, but if there is, I'm going to be first in line to buy it. Well, believe it or not, kids, you have listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Well, technically saving 1 hour, 24 minutes and 20 seconds as of now.
And the turning the last podcast into a video is now at 88% complete. So, yeah, it takes quite a while to turn the podcast into a movie on my computer.
Exciting.
And as we say every week, kids, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
Well, he's no Davy Jones. Somebody call my mama. I hit my music. Oh, my mom's coming home tomorrow. Woohoo! Feel like dancing.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo! Can somebody call me?